You're listening to the What's the Fuzz podcast, where we break you out of your vacuum seal and get down to what's real. Never miss another episode again. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And now, your host, Reiner.
Hey Fuzzos, what's going on? Thanks so much for tuning in for your weekly fix, or if it's your first time for trying something a little bit on the weird side. Hopefully you'll stick around till it gets good. This episode was recorded in February, but it should be getting put out around March 9th, 2021. Not a lot has changed, but there was an incredible show put out a few days ago. I think you know what I'm talking about. It was a fun little dance party called Vibe Check. Gotta shout out the guys that put that thing on. We're talking Ace of Hearts Fox, Bad Will, Fende, Nonstop Pup, Sky Mizrahi, Silverhound, DJ Woozy, and Yeen Wubs. Y'all were fucking awesome. That was an incredible show. Shout outs to all of you guys. And if you get the chance, you guys need to follow them on Twitter and everything. Truly an incredible, incredible show. If you're a BIPOC fur out there, and you're having a hard time keeping track of events like Vibe Check on our side of the community, I've made a card to keep things together. It's called BIPOCFurryEvents.card.co, and I'll be linking that below that you can check out in the show notes, hopefully at the end of this episode. With that out of the way, we'll be talking about writing Singapore and cultural differences on this episode of What's the Fuzz? That was a weird thing to do with my voice. Tonight I'm sitting down with Mikasi, the wolf furry writer that's been part of the fandom for more than a decade, with stories and anthologies such as Dogs of War, What the Fox, and Gods with Fur. Be sure to check them out over on Twitter at Mikasi Wolf, and I'll be linking their other projects in the show notes below. Thanks so much for coming on the show tonight. I feel like this episode's going to be, like, a lot of fun, because honestly, I haven't chatted with someone from Singapore before. My only experience really is from that movie Crazy Rich Asians, if you know about it.
Oh, I watched a movie before. The storyline was actually relatively okay, but I didn't really agree with the portrayal of Asians there, because for some reason most of the characters there seems like snobs. But truthfully speaking, it's more of a very select group that are like that. But of course, those guys portrayed there are much richer than me, which probably gives rise to a different set of ethos.
Fair enough. Hey, I got an icebreaker question to throw at you real quick. You ready for it?
Yes, I'm have to be ready, yes.
So what I want to know is what the strangest thing you've ever seen at a FurCon is.
Strangest thing would probably be, I was at two furry conventions. Well, it's the same furry convention at two different years. I was at Eurofurrens 2012 and 2014. For those who unaware, that's the biggest fur con in Europe. Usually is hosted in Germany. In 2012, the theme was about Rome, ancient Rome. So during the opening ceremony, the chairman was brought in on a chariot pulled by fursuiters. Instead of feral horses or anything like that, which would probably be difficult in the confines of the event area.
So, to get started with the actual questions then, our furs out there, our lovely listeners, would love to know a little bit more about you. So, why don't you tell them how long you've been living in Singapore, how old you are, your pronouns, your ethnicity, and how you would describe your sexuality and gender, if you were comfortable with that.
Okay. Well, I live in Singapore, in case it wasn't already clear. The former name for the country is the Republic of Singapore. Usually, these days, when I tell people where I'm from, I say the Republic of Singapore, because sometimes people confuse it to be part of China for some unknown indiscernible reason, which it is not. I've been living here my whole life. Well, I was born here. My great-grandfather arrived here, then obviously had my grandmother and my mother and me. I'm Hainanese. Hainanese is one of many dialect groups, many Chinese dialect groups. People tend to think of Chinese as just, Chinese, Han Chinese, full stop. It's not. It's something like each dialect group is like a different tribe, basically. We had a different origin from mainland China like hundreds of years ago. So Hainanese typically came from Hainan Island, which I don't really know what the location is. But we are quite rare in Singapore. I mean, the most common dialect group in Singapore is Hokkien's and Cantonese. So you hear the dialect spoken in the streets usually is Hokkien. But in Singapore, everybody knows English. Everybody speaks English because they will have learned it in school and it's our working language. Though the national language is actually Malay because historically when we got independence in 1963, that was the arrangement. Nobody actually speaks Malay except Malay people.
And I think you forgot to mention how old you were and stuff because you're explaining the Republic of Singapore.
So I'm approximately 30 years old. Like it or not, I'm... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I found the fandom when I was in polytechnic. I found it by accident through the art, actually, because back in the day, I actually enjoyed the movies, like those Disney movies, especially those featuring animal characters. For some reason, I don't really like the movies with human characters much. I think because they are far less interesting, and I mean, we see humans every day, correct? So, movies that I enjoyed were stuff like Oliver and Company. That was actually before my time, but it came out on DVD and all that. The Lion King. What else? Yeah, I mean, there's also others by other producers like Bottle, which is by, I believe, DreamWorks. No, Universal Studios. Yeah. Then when I was growing up, there were TV series like Sword Cats, Animaniacs, Timon and Pumbaa of Lion King fame, and what you call that? And the Mickey Mouse series, basically, like Mickey Mouse Works and House of Mouse. So I guess when I was, I got my first internet connection, actually, officially, when I was 16 and a half. That was actually a little unusual, but so when I searched for art online, I found out about the furry fandom. That's how I actually discovered it. I actually tried my hand at art for a while, but around the same time I started writing, because before I even entered polytechnic, I always have this particular story idea in my head. And surprise, surprise, it featured an anthropomorphic character, though it's a villain, and that's a werewolf in Singapore.
But anyway, we got a little ahead of ourselves there. I want to know who your main OC is and how you express yourself through them.
Okay. My main OC, or first Sonia, as the case may be, is Zaka. It's not Mikasi Wolf. The word Mikasi Wolf actually came from a story character I wrote back in 2008. Mm-hmm. But Zaka is the first Sonia. Zaka is basically he's an army ranger. So in a way, he fights the walls that I cannot fight. Not necessarily in the fighting kind of way, but he stands in place of me, if that can be understood. He also came about in a story I wrote back in 2010, though I never did complete that story, but that takeaway I got was that character. He's a Native American Sioux Grey Wolf who actually joined the army, but his family didn't really like it because it is seen as serving the foreign power. But I actually like that. That's the background of a fighter standing in place of me for my interaction. So that's why I use him as the first Sonya.
So you've been in the furry fandom for a long time, right? Like 14 years or something like that?
Oh, yes. 14 years.
Oh, wow. So what changes have you noticed over time?
Changes. What I notice is like it seems to stay pretty much the same. Though back in the 2007 to 2012, I wasn't really following the news on the fandom. I was actually more or less more interested in the media side of things. So it's, I think back in the early days, people are like more interested in that shared interest. People join the fandom, people talk to each other in the fandom because we are all interested in that art, in that writing, in that fursuit thing. But I think these days there's a lot of like kind of separation thing about what, you know, what the burn first, the whatever. I mean, shouldn't this community thing be all about the shared interest rather than, oh, you're different, you are separate from us, that kind of thing? I mean, in Singapore, for example, we have four official languages and technically four official races, though I won't use the word official races. So even though we live next to one another, in Singapore, the law is such that the houses, you cannot just have, oh, this neighborhood is just for Malays, this neighborhood is just for Chinese. And though back in colonial times, the British dude Sir Stamford Raffles tried to do that, but when it came to Singapore's independence, the law is that everybody, each area must have a certain percentage of every race, so everybody actually see one another every day, and in that sense they understand one another, they tolerate one another, and so nobody really sees each other as strange, you see. Even like say our apartment buildings have an empty space on the first floor, unlike most other countries. That's called the void deck. It's usually used for major events like weddings or funerals. So one week you might have a Chinese funeral on the first floor. Another week you might have a Malay wedding. So I mean, this constant interaction that people see, right, will make them understand one another more, you see. It's not like, oh, you live in your own corner of the earth, your own Beverly Hills hillside neighborhood, and you don't really need to see the masses. And thus, you always think, oh, okay, what if I get robbed? It's not nearly that simple.
So are there differences between what I may see as furry and what you see as furry over there in the Republic of Singapore?
I mean, I guess... Okay, I mean, I guess I see furry the same way. I mean, they're actually Singapore furries, though I never really interacted with them in person, maybe online a little bit. Singapore furry, I think it originated from the US furry, as in people, when things got online, people found the furry on the internet. Then I think understand the Singapore furry community started with just 7 people. That was, I think, early 2000s. I wasn't one of them. Then eventually the group grew and grew and grew. Even though I'm part of the Facebook group, I never really went for any furry events because I didn't really see the need to.
So what are some challenges you face as a furry, especially when you're new to the scene?
Okay. I used to do art. Then I got into writing because I found out that, okay, why not? I mean, words also actually can say more. But when you are a newcomer to the scene, like a new writer, and you come into the group, people are like, who are you? Oh, why should we even hear you out? Why should we listen to what you say? And there's, in writing, there's this thing called beta swapping, as in, you send your work to somebody to critique and they send their work to critique. When you're a new writer, sometimes people rather you don't critique their work, but they will critique your work, but they won't want you to critique their work. It's like your opinion doesn't really matter, even though it might or might not have some value. I mean, that is a bit slightly hurting in a way, though it's kind of understandable, especially when you know that your own skill level is probably not that good.
So do you usually do a lot of research when you're doing these stories that pull from other cultures?
Yes. I'm actually, I do research for research because aside from, I believe that realism, it plays a very important part in the story. If it's too out of the ordinary, people will start to doubt what they're reading. If you put in, like, say, some actual life events that people can relate to, they'll go, okay, yeah, I've been through this. When you do research, you'll find out more about stuff you never understood yourself. So in a way, you can say that writers kind of are subject matter experts, because we have to research a lot of different stuff that we will normally not even read about in our normal day-to-day life. For example, I had a different novel I was writing. I had this character, his people were from, actually left the old world. Originally, I put that he's Russian. But years later, when I did further research, I found out that actually it's not so straightforward. There are also other people in Russia, like the Circassians, the Cossacks and all these other people, which actually their culture might fit better for storytelling purposes rather than generic Russian culture, generic Chinese culture. Like even places like say China, people think of it as just one culture, but actually there are so many different tribes there, including a tribe called the Musu, which is what I use for one of my other stories. Research also is not just about cultures or what. The person, how the character, his job is like, will give that sense of familiarity to readers. How realistic a scene is, an event is like a concert, a rock concert is. I mean, there's a difference between a person who never been to a rock concert and they write about a rock concert and a person who have been to it and write about it. The atmosphere is completely different. As in a movie, if you're a movie director, you have to worry about budget costs. Oh, I want 200 people to stand here, but you have to pay these 200 people. Oh, I want special effects. I have to pay the animator. In a story, you don't have to worry about these director costs. Whatever you want, you can write. It's just a matter of how well you portray it. You portray the atmosphere of the scene and how rowdy it is, how quiet it is, that kind of thing.
So you've been to EuroFrance in 2012 and 2014, right?
Yes.
What were those experiences like, if you had described them in a nutshell?
Oh, actually, the Germans were quite, German people as a general, they're very, very, very courteous and polite. Even if, let's say, because the first EuroFrance I've been to is in Magdeburg. That's a very small town on the east of Germany. Now, naturally, two Hainanese people appearing out of nowhere on the streets. Normally, people will find it very unusual. So even though people on the streets, they turn and look at us, they never really voice out anything. They never even say any phrases, which I probably wouldn't understand anyway because people there mostly speak German. They just politely kept quiet and didn't say anything, even though we were quite... Because me, I went with my mother there, actually, for both conventions, because I wanted her to know what are furry conventions like, and I wanted to share the experience with her. So, in those event areas, one thing I find interesting is that for like those stage shows, sometimes when somebody's on stage say something, one member of the audience will say something loudly like, yes, yes, he is, stuff like that. But in places like Singapore, nobody in the audience will say anything, which I assume that's a standard. And yeah, in general, it was quite relatively a pleasant experience. Nobody will really like found anything, found fault with my ethnicity or anything like that.
Do you look forward to going into any American cons in the future?
Yes. Actually, AntroCon was originally on my target list back in around for 2012-2014. If you are living in the US, it's relatively not expensive to go to the convention, correct? Because even the plane tickets are domestic flights. But when you fly from Asia to the US or even Europe, the cost is not really that cheap. So usually I have to calculate the cost benefit ratio. Is there any historical sites I can see in that city also? So originally 2012 when I went to Magdeburg, actually there isn't really much to see, but I wanted to go to the furry con then. But in 2014, the con moved to Berlin, and that's there's a lot of historical sites there, and I'm very interested in history. So I thought, okay, Berlin, I have to go to New France 14 because I also can look at Berlin. Yeah, that's part of the how I do cost-benefit ratio analysis.
So Zilch wants to know, what aspect of your culture are you most proud of?
Okay, most proud of. Most proud of. I don't know. I understand that Hainanese are also very clannish. Even if, like, say, we are Hainanese people, we are from different families, different surnames even, they will prefer to have dealings with other Hainanese people. Like even, let's say, a Hainanese boss, supposedly, they rather if they speak to a customer and the customer has like one Hainanese guy and one non-Hainanese guy, they rather speak to the Hainanese guy because they feel closer to that person. Though to me, honestly, I'm more like, I mean, shouldn't you treat everyone the same? in the furry fandom, you can call it species familiarity. If like we have a Zootopia-like world, a fox, when his other fox is in trouble, he'll probably run to other foxes, correct? He won't really run to other rabbits. One thing that Chinese people in general, not just Hainanese, celebrate every year is the Lunar New Year celebrations. It's like, okay, in the Western countries, they have the New Year Day, 1st of January. For some Asian countries, like I think including Korea, we have this thing called Lunar New Year. So it's usually that's the only time of the year that people who are working on different parts of the world, they'll come back to the grandparents and to respect them in that sense. And traditionally, Lunar New Year, which some people call Chinese New Year, which I don't really like the term because it's celebrated by a few different countries, it actually celebrates the coming of spring because winter is supposed to be very harsh. So when spring comes, yay, celebration. So that's the time that everybody, family gets together. Though obviously, like all family get-togethers, there is disadvantages such as your cousins or your nosy relatives might ask you, hey, what job are you doing? Are you getting married yet? How's the person you are dating? Is she rich or what? Then I'm like, okay, that's my own business, you know. But I think that's a problem faced more on every family get together rather than exclusively Lunar New Year.
Okie doke.
Yeah.
And he'd also like to know, how you feel about the whole Pan-Asian thing, because people like from America, for instance, just kind of lump Chinese, Japanese, Korean people all together into one monolith.
Well, all I have to say is this. We are all of different cultures. We all come from different parts of the world. But it doesn't mean that we have to be treated differently, because when we move to different parts of the world, we all also have dreams just like everyone else. We all want to live our life in peace. We all want to have jobs that we feel fulfilling. We all want to have families, grow old, see our grandcubs or whatever. I don't think labeling in categories is very useful unless it's for language administration, I mean. But I also want people to be aware that there are different types of people. And that is a reality, and we shouldn't judge people based on, oh, because we don't know much about them, and then we assume.
Welcome to the middle of this episode. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to drop us a sub or a follow. If you happen to be listening on Spotify or some other platform, be sure to check out the show notes where we link useful resources as well as extended versions of these episodes on Patreon if they're available. Don't forget to follow us at whatsthefuzz_ on Twitter. And if you happen to be a BIPOC listener out there, don't be afraid to reach out to us to see how you can take part in the show yourself. Okay, that's all. On with the show. So now I'd like to ask you some writing questions, if you're down for that.
All right.
So out of all of the anthologies you've submitted to, which had the most interesting premise to you?
Okay. That would probably be the story called A Leap Forward. Originally, I wrote it for submission to a furry sports anthology. Furry anthologies, usually the focus is trying to have a team that makes it different from normal human-centric stories, so such that the animal characters actually use their animal attributes throughout the story. So in the sports anthology, naturally, they have to use their skills to do the sport. I wanted to do a sport that was interesting, that I felt interested in. So I chose parkour. It's basically like an acrobatic discipline that originated in France, but is now practiced throughout the world under the name of parkour and free running. I found that sport interesting because there's actually a history behind it. It's not just a bunch of people started jumping up and down and then everybody started doing that. So it's actually a long history of a few friends in this ghetto in Paris. They were all bored, they wanted stuff to do, and then they discovered that a lot of things in their neighborhood can be used as kind of an obstacle course. They can jump from this concrete thing to another concrete thing. Then eventually because after school, they don't really have anything to do, you know. That was back in the 80s. There was no video games. Well, there were, but there were no video games or even much TV. So that's what they did. And eventually, it became a physical discipline that the whole world does. So my story actually features this African civet who's of Congo descent, who's originally in Paris, but because of some accident that he was training his brother in parkour, his brother got an accident, so he had to leave Paris and flee to the United States as a kind of illegal immigrant. Then he, in this part of the United States in my story, intersection, there's a very large parkour community there, who all live on the roofs because the rent is very expensive and you live on the roof, it's free. So it's kind of all these people, they all have their own day jobs, like they do deliveries for documents, for food and all that, and that's how they live. And so you can kind of say it kind of mirrors like the immigration situation, as in sometimes people assume that, oh, when somebody moved to another country, they're here to find trouble. They're here to take your jobs. But sometimes people are just trying to survive. They're just trying to make ends meet. I mean, if you stay in your own oppressive regime, you're not going to be for long, correct? So you have to leave to somewhere better. But when you leave to somewhere better, you're not welcome. And that is kind of a chain that keeps happening and happening. And it was briefly mentioned in that story, A Leap Forward. A Leap Forward, as in the reason why my main character, Lasu is basically his French name, though he's actually of Congolese descent. He actually doesn't like to walk on the streets much because people, when they see his African civet spots, they start making comments, and sometimes the more violent ones try to like attack him. So usually he rather stay on the roof, jump from roof to roof to go get anywhere. That's partly the premise of the story.
Gotcha. Did you ever struggle with writer's block? And if so, how would you work around it?
Oh yeah, all the time. In fact, I have a block that lasted like for the better part of like practically 2 months. I mean, sometimes what I do is I just don't write. Though that is actually not very useful on its own because nothing really gets done. I have a belief that when you write something, you must have the interest. Because if you don't have the interest and you write, it doesn't come out good. Something like, say, writing for a long time or even a sport. Let's say you're a sportsman, you haven't been doing that sport for a long time. You get used to the notion of not doing anything. And that it becomes more and more difficult to get back into it. Because your body is used to not doing anything. So I suggest that when you are stuck on one story, you have another parallel story idea going. As in, there was this time in 2016, I was concurrently writing between two novels. So when I'm sick of one novel, I just go on to the other one, and vice versa. Even then, also have some short stories that you're writing at the same time. Make sure it is themes that you're interested in, that you feel strongly about. Like when I wrote that parkour team story that I was talking about, I was interested in that team as a whole. That's why I could end up, that's why it ended up at 13,400 words, which honestly seems to be quite a scarily common thing for a few of my stories, because normally most submissions, they will not take anything more than 8,000 words. So my stories that reach 13,000 are usually stories that I happen to be interested in and I feel excited in. When you're excited in something that you can do, you will do it well. Whether it's sport, whether it's writing, whether it's some other hobbies, trade crafting, be best to be interested in it, then you do it.
Do you feel writing often gets overlooked in the furry fandom?
Yes. Well, you will notice that usually in any survey, they will show, like, it's even they say show a pie chart or what, then they show the number of writers is quite small. But that's not the point, because that's numbers don't lie, correct? But usually when they have an article, a newspaper article or online news article, they usually feature the artists, the fursuiters. They don't feature the writers, though we exist. We exist. So it's a bit depressing because you cannot deny that it's all the parts that make up the whole, correct? It's not just there's four parts that make the whole. You cannot just say, oh, three parts is all there is. In news and in actual research methodology, you have to cover all the sides of a story. Whether is it the good side and the bad side, then people can make a consensus. It's not, oh, you only select certain things and then that's all.
Why do you think it is that it's so easily overlooked?
I guess most, a lot of people don't like to read, because reading can be a bit challenging, especially when you have to see so many words just to get one image in your head. They say a picture paints 1,000 words, but words, on the other hand, you need a lot more words just to show an image. You need words to show one image. It's not even 1,000 words to show one image. So people see a wall of text. The word wall of text always seems to be a common word. They see newspapers, they don't want to read. They say, oh, TLDR, too long, don't want to read. Then that is, I think that's the main challenge. People cannot see words as a pain. You can learn a lot through stories. Sometimes through stories, you can learn about life. There was this anthology that, back in my university days, there was this anthology about set in this depressing world, depressing planet called New Tibet. It's basically, New Tibet was this frozen ice planet colonized, and then people set up city there to mine its resources. But everybody who goes there, it wasn't what they expected, or they were tricked there, kind of like indentured labor, and then they all had depressing lives. So every story has a depressing ending usually. But I liked it because it makes you feel. To me, a story done did its purpose when you think about, when you're still thinking about it, when you're no longer reading it. Stories should not just be about the funny parts or the fun parts. It should also be about real life. I mean, of course, some people might not like, but it has to be written about something that is close to your heart, that you actually feel strongly about. And honestly, and I was reading this depressing anthology when I was studying for my uni final exams, which actually probably wasn't a good prelude to do that. But if it can make me rather read than study, even though it's depressing, I think it done its job pretty well.
All right. Got the last set of questions to ask you here. Then we'll be wrapping up.
All right.
So what was your 2020 like?
Ooh, stuck at home mostly. let me see. Well, I had to submit my master's thesis. So I had to make corrections. I made corrections and back and forth with my supervisor until I submitted it around May. I started looking for a job around then because I didn't want the job to interfere with my master's thesis. Around April, the Singapore government launched this thing called the circuit breaker lockdown to make sure that all public amenities are not to be used from 8th of April to the 7th of May. So even food stores are not allowed to have anybody dine in. Everybody had to wear a mask. If you don't wear a mask, you get $200 fine.
Oh, shit.
Yes. So there was also this trend of people, when they take photos, selfies, sometimes they are also scared that they take photo without the mask, and the photo come out and people actually check. They are also afraid that they get punished. But anyway, it was really peaceful walking on the streets during then. There was no long crowds, nothing. You want to order food, the stores are open, but you don't have to sit in there. You have to order it through online delivery service like Deliveroo, GrabFood, and FoodPanda. Pizza Hut was 50% off, so I had the most amount of pizza in my life during that. I think I ate about 3 pizzas in 1 month. Not the whole pizza, I mean 3 slices each time. I shared with my grandparents and other people. And then I started looking for a job. There was no replies of jobs for the first few months. In July, there was one, but that was a traineeship, which, frankly speaking, I felt that it's exploitive because they pay you much less than a full timer, and yet they want a full degree holder. So we all mentally, I also know that it's probably not even to train you, just to get cheap labor. Then throughout the months in September, all the job interviews start coming in because people were more confident. But there were a lot of bad contracts. I mean, people also took advantage. A lot of employers try to take advantage of the situation by giving lower pay or trying to give bad contracts, like 24 months probation, that kind of nonsense. That was actually one employer, not many, so don't get me wrong. Then eventually, I found an employer that didn't seem at all, that didn't seem exploitive and fake, because there were fake interviews. There were interviews that they call you up, but within 10 minutes, they didn't really ask you anything about the job. It's just that they just want to make up the numbers so they can hire somebody that they really pre-chose. That actually happens, yes. And unlike in the US, where job forms cannot put, not allowed to ask you about disability, not allowed to ask you about your age, not allowed to ask you about your last salary, not allowed to ask you about your race. In Singapore, it's not against the law to do that. It is suggested by the ministry not to do that, but people do that anyway. So sometimes I don't fill up those parts. But the employers will just ask you in the interview, and short of flipping off to them, and thus ending the interview prematurely, of which I had traveled 1 hour for, I just had to answer. At the last few interviews, I start saying, how is this relevant? In which case, they ended the interview anyway. But about a few weeks ago, I got a job with a plastics company, so yeah. So even though it took a lot of months, I mean, maybe it was better to get a company that wasn't depressingly dodgy or rude. Yeah.
So what do you think about the COVID response in Singapore? You think it was pretty good?
It was pretty good. It was effective. We had very few cases on a day-to-day basis. There were actual quarantine measures in place for dormitory, for workers who will live in the dormitory. There were safety ambassadors who walk in pairs, who ensure that you're putting on your mask. If not, they'll fine you $200. Now it's $300, so the bounty is now higher. I mean, it's a pretty small price to pay to get a mask for like 60 cents compared. It's not just the $300, it's about saving your own life. The mask is to save your own life. It's not...
Oh, trust me, I know, but if we did the same thing here, people would go crazy. Oh, man.
Actually, I don't quite understand what is it with the not wearing of masks. I mean, it's a bit uncomfortable, but aside from that, what is it? I still don't understand.
The people here just don't like being told what to do. That's it. That's the whole thing.
Okay.
They think it's some kind of weird conspiracy or something. Like, if they do what the government says, they're going to get microchipped in their brains and stuff. It's not great, but it's what we have to deal with here.
Okay, I'm not sure what that is about. Okay.
You really don't want to know. You're better off over there. Trust me.
Yeah.
What do you think was the most effective part of the COVID plan that rolled out over there?
Okay. The most effective one was probably... I don't know. I think it's stopping all air travel in and out, and ensuring everyone wore a mask. I think in the long run, is everyone was forced to wear a mask on pain of $300. Even if you separate people are going to come next to each other at some point of time. You cannot possibly go to a supermarket without coming in close contact with people. The mask part was probably the most effective one. I mean, even when you're wearing a mask and your face is right next to somebody, you have a very low chance of catching even flu from them. So I think that was the best part. Though the amount of plastic waste is probably... from the mask is probably going to be a bit of a nightmare.
How does someone who earnestly wants to become more worldly and more tolerant, like you perhaps, how can they broaden their worldviews?
Okay, I mean, you can meet
other, you can go and meet other people. I mean, if you obviously you have to know people before you meet them. If you obviously is, I wouldn't recommend you just go to somebody randomly on the street and say, "Hey, yo, how are you?" I mean, that's probably not a good decision. Maybe you can go to, like, say, a community, actual official events, like, say, community centers, where there are people of different backgrounds, and maybe join a event, or don't even need to be a long-term event. It could be even a single day event. Then you get to speak to people. And when you know, understand people's backgrounds, sometimes you understand why they do what they do, especially for culturally speaking. Like, okay, for example, I mean, because in Singapore, we are used to seeing people's different races events below our apartment building, like the occasional funeral or wedding. So we understand this is really part of the culture. But if you come in new to Singapore and you see all this, you're like, how can this be? This is so noisy, you know, the funeral chanting is keeping me, is very noisy during the daytime, though it's usually not at the night. So I suggest people meet each other at official formal events, partially for safety reasons. And don't assume anything until you know more about their personal culture. Like, I had one of my academic supervisors was actually from Iran, but nobody really treats him any differently because in Singapore, we are all used to having people of all cultures here. We don't really like say, because of whatever is happening over the Middle East, so we don't trust you. If he's allowed to come in, I'm actually okay. Yeah.
All right, last question for you. Ready for it?
Ready as I will be, yeah.
What's your favorite thing about being a furry?
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm allowed to express myself in story ideas that most mainstream publishers might not like. For example, when I wrote stories with some swearing in for furry publications, it's generally accepted. Even some certain themes about like depression is accepted. But when I write it for a local publication, even themes like somebody being like in a getting high or even some swearing, they don't even allow it. They consider it like, oh, your writing is very harsh, you know. But I'm like, no, this is life. Life is harsh. If you don't write life as it is, how do people who read it understand it? This is not a children's picture book, you know. I mean, I can even put stories, general audience stories. In the furry fandom, I can put general audience stories with LGBT characters and nobody will judge based on that. I can put multicultural characters and nobody will like bat an eyelid. But in mainstream publishers, they always say, oh no, I think you should make this character white, you know. If not, people might not want to read it. Then I'm like, what the hell, man? I mean, this race part never happened in Singapore for my publishing side because racism is punished very strongly, harshly in Singapore. So nobody actually does it. It's just that even publishing houses are too safe. Like, in the National Library, there used to be this picture book about two gay penguins that are trying to look after an egg. Because of the homosexuality theme, the parents wanted to ban the book outright from the library. But eventually, the consensus is that they just shift the picture book to the adult section, which to me is kind of weird, because it's not really explicit material or whatever. Why are you even doing that? I mean, you have to understand that your idea of the world is not necessarily how the world is like. So what I like most about being a furry is that I can express myself without
any worry of people saying, why don't you write more of this type? Why don't you make your story more like this? I mean, aside from feedback and suggestions, of course, there are still some themes that are off limits, obviously.
Hey, well said. Being able to express yourself in any way you want is one of the best things about being a furry. 100%. We gotta keep it real, we gotta keep it weird, and we gotta keep it ooh-woo.
Okay.
Sorry. Maybe not the ooh-woo. I don't know. But that just about does it for this episode. Thank you again for coming on the show and chatting with me.
Okay, thank you, Rima. Yeah.
You've got the spotlight to promote anything you like. Go for it.
My FA name is Mikasi Wolf, spelled like that without the hyphen. My Twitter is @MikasiWolf, also without the hyphen.
All right. Be sure to follow him over on Twitter and Furfinny and everybody else. You can follow the show on Twitter @WhatsTheFuzz. Thanks everybody out there for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.